Tuesday morning to you, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon Podcast. Since it is Tuesday, this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode several years ago. Thanks for downloading, and I sure hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on November 16th of 2014 under the headline Wreck of the Steamer U.S. Grant, a Baffling Historical Mystery. Here we go. Just before Christmas in 1871, a little steamer called the U.S. Grant came to grief on the legendary Columbia River Bar, as had dozens before and as would hundreds after. What makes the U.S. Grant's demise unusual, though, is that it wasn't trying to cross the bar. It had been set adrift in the middle of a dark and stormy night to drift helplessly onto a raging bar with its two owners on board. Now, whether that happened accidentally or deliberately, we can't know for sure. But at least it's a possibility that it was done on purpose. The U.S. Grant was actually built by a farmer named Clinton Kelly, who lived in the East Portland suburb of Brooklyn in 1865. The boat, a modest 70-footer, soon was doing a tidy business shuttling people back and forth around the mouth of the river at Astoria and occasionally towing sailing ships across the bar when the seas were calm enough for it. In 1868, the steamboat was sold to Captain J.D.H. Gray, a former employee of the Oregon Steam Navigation Company, which was doing a thriving business on the Columbia River runs at the time. In fact, OSN at that time had a very nearly airtight monopoly on the Columbia River traffic. Gray put the U.S. Grant into service, making a regular run from Astoria to Ilwaco on Baker Bay, just inside the mouth of the river. It soon became very popular. The beaches of southwest Washington are lovely and long and easily reached across the narrow peninsula that today is the home of Cape Disappointment State Park. Alas, Captain Gray didn't have long to enjoy the fruits of his enterprise. On the wildly stormy evening of December 19th, 1871, Gray and his brother were the only two men aboard the U.S. Grant. The little steamer was moored at Fort Canby, which was pretty much the closest point on the entire river to the mouth of the Columbia. A storm was blustering up the river without. The two men were deep in the engine room, performing a little maintenance on the power plant when it suddenly came to their attention that the vessel was no longer making the sounds and movements of a ship that's tied to a dock. Hustling to the deck, they found that the ship had come free from its mooring lines. The blasting winds tearing out of the west had pushed the ship out into the current, and the current, augmented by a fast ebbing tide, was shoving the boat out to sea at a frightening pace. The two brothers ran below decks to try to bring up steam, but the boiler was stone cold. It wouldn't be able to make power for at least half an hour, and by that time it would be far too late. They raced up on deck and dropped the anchors. That bought them a little time as the relentless current dragged the anchors through the sand, but it didn't buy them enough. And soon the little steamer was hard aground on Sand Island. Moving now with desperate haste, the brothers launched a lifeboat and managed to scramble into it before the surf could snatch it and break it or capsize it. Unable to make landing through the towering surf, they stayed out on the bar all night, and the following day were found drifting on the river, huddled together for warmth and nearly frozen to death. They both soon recovered. Their riverboat, however, did not. The relentless surf soon pounded it to pieces for a total loss. And that's the story. On the face of it, a fairly straightforward tale of shipwreck. And yet, there are things about this story that are puzzling, if not suspicious. For instance, why were they riding the storm out at Fort Canby instead of Ilwaco, just a mile or two inland along the shore of Baker Bay? Ilwaco, at that time a major stagecoach stop on the land route to Puget Sound, would have been a much more pleasant place to spend the night. It also would have been a more convenient place to perform maintenance on one's steam engine. And what about crew members? Most suspicious of all, though, is the fact that the boat somehow broke loose from its mooring lines. This is an extremely rare event, bordering on unheard of. Ships in harbors like Baker Bay have to be moored by two lines, one at the bow and one at the stern. Otherwise, the untied end will swing away from the dock when the tide turns. Writing at the dock with the current flowing past, one of the two lines is always taut and the other slack. If the taut one should come untied, the ship will start moving and keep moving until it comes to the end of the slack line, which will jerk it to a sudden and obvious stop. At that point, anyone on board will instantly know something is wrong and come up on deck to investigate. Had such a thing happened to the U.S. Grant, the brothers, seasoned mariners both, would have been on deck in a flash and had the boat snug against the dock in a few minutes. But that's not what happened. There really are only two ways a moored ship can stealthily leave the dock without the crew knowing there is aught amiss. Either the same line was used to tie both ends of the ship, a mistake that no seasoned skipper would ever make, or someone cut her loose, slack end first. So who would have done such a thing? Could it have been sabotage by the Oregon Steam Navigation Company? Maybe. OSN was known for a certain degree of ruthlessness. But then again, probably not. For one thing, the brothers, having suffered a big loss, would have asked all sorts of questions and raised all sorts of suspicions, none of which seems to have happened. For another thing, had OSN wanted the Gray brothers out of business, it could easily have accomplished the job without breaking any laws. They'd only have to put one of their boats on a competing run, slash the prices to under the Gray brothers' operating costs, and wait for them to go out of business. Indeed, that sort of thing was common in those pre-antitrust law years. What about an inside job? Could the brothers for some reason have turned their own boat loose? It would have been easy enough for them to do so. They'd simply have to tie off at Fort Canby, remove the lifeboat, wait until the time was right, and untie the mooring lines. At the best moment, with the ship well offshore away from any breakers, they'd hop in the lifeboat. They might have to pull fiercely against the ebb for a while to avoid getting sucked out to sea, but after that they'd have a full 10 hours before the next ebb would start. True, there was a storm raging, but the inside of the Columbia is relatively protected. It could be done, and done with every expectation of coming through safely. But again, why? Unless the boat was secretly insured, it simply makes no sense. If they wanted to get out of the business, why would they destroy their boat rather than selling it? It's an event, again, that makes no sense. It makes no sense as an accident, and it makes no sense as a deliberate act. But then again, we're talking about a dark and stormy night nearly 150 years ago on the wild outer edge of the world. Who knows what really happened that night? Key sources in this story have included works by James A. Gibbs and E. W. Wright. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. More info is at our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. Speaking of which, if you enjoy listening to me, you might check out some of my audiobooks. You can find them most easily with a search for my name on audible.com. Most of them are old pulp stuff, H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Rice Burroughs, etc., but at least two of them are Offbeat Oregon history type stuff. Check them out if you're so inclined. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.